Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming over Facebook. Next week, it'll include Progressive Radio Network. The week after, YouTube. So we welcome you to join us. I have a lot to share today, and I'd like to explain it because a lot of the listeners, especially on Facebook, are new. I've been doing the same identical type of program for over 42 years, every day. It's the longest-running non-commercial daily radio program in American history. I always start off with health and nutrition, generally anywhere from 20 to 25 minutes, sometimes a half hour, because a lot of people like, well, they like to know, how can I overcome illnesses? What are my options? What if I want to live a longer life? Is it possible to reverse or improve on diseases? And the answer to that is yes. And so I try to get quality information. Because we have such a variety of people listening with backgrounds, I want this information to be one that you can trust. So I rely upon the best sources, major universities, colleges, published in quality journals, and always cutting edge. I'm not going to share something with you that you can easily find for yourself or that you could find in the other media. But we specialize in this, and we vet everything. So a lot of people just want health and nutrition. They don't want anything else, and that's fine. So starting today, if you just like the health part of our program, I'll be ending that with some music, and then I'm inviting those who want to hear other parts of our program to keep tuned in. You can click, and it'll show you on your computer when that happens. Click, and then the other part of the program. Now, what's the other part of the program? Well, we do more discussion here about the environment than any other radio program in American history. Always something that tells us what the problems are and what we as individuals can do to resolve them. And then I like to get guests who have something to say that tells us the truth where the mainstream media has not. Today, for example, we're going to have on a former top FBI person, Colleen Rowley, and she's out in Minnesota. She's a retired FBI special agent who was with the agency for her entire adult life, 24 years, and she also was a former Minneapolis Division legal counsel who testified before the Joint Intelligence Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee. So she's a whistleblower also. So she worked with Mueller, who is now overseeing the special investigation. Why am I having her on? Why would I select her? Because virtually everyone in the mainstream media is saying what an impeccable reputation, how objective and honest and clean in their thoughts both Mueller and James Comey are. Well, she says that's not true. She worked with them. She knows them. And she's going to inform today on things they oversaw, supervised, or allowed that anyone who hears the story would say that's unethical, that's illegal, that's immoral. So how could they be objective today? Why are we painting these people as if their word should not be challenged? Their integrity is unquestioned. So that's where we go. We go where the truth is. And sometimes you have to go into areas that may not even be comfortable for people to hear. But I also bring on guests. In fact, we have a series called Conversations with Remarkable Minds. We seek out the finest minds around the world who can enlighten us on topics that empower us. A lot of these are philosophers, great thinkers. 99% you've never heard of wouldn't know them. But we have the whole series. We have over 600 interviews, conversations with remarkable minds. We also have a series of programs, over 1,000, and you can download any of these free as a public service. They're, that are called, and this is even tonight, it's once a week I do this at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's the Progressive Commentary Hour. Now, this is a single theme, one topic, where I'll have one, two, or three guests on who are really good. And we vet people to make sure they're not coming on with a political, ideological, bias. I don't care what a person's religious beliefs are. That's their business. I never advocate for one religion over another because these are highly personal. I never advocate what you should believe in politically. But I will challenge inequality, injustice, or corruption within a political system. And then we deal with social issues. The social issues are important because we'll tell you the truth about Libya. Now, do I support Gaddafi? No. But I do support the Libyan people because they did not represent a threat to anyone except terrorists. That you could believe terrorists didn't have a free hand in Libya. But how could you not want to know that by destroying a country that was, of all the 54 countries in Africa, it was the most prosperous, the wealthiest, had the longest lifespan, the lowest infant mortality rate, the best education, the highest literacy rate, higher than America, higher than England, higher than France. They had more educated people, where it was the only Muslim country in the world where women were given the most rights. In fact, it was against the law in Libya to in any way denigrate women. You wouldn't find what goes on in Saudi Arabia, our allies, that we refuse to condemn, or Kuwait, or Qatar, or United Arab Emirates, or Bahrain, where women don't have those rights. Libya had them. They had more democracy than the United States. And so they had no crime. It was the Paris of Africa. Now it's completely, utterly, totally destroyed. Not a single person takes responsibility. Well, that's why I do social issues, because we were meant to do more in life than simply be alive, work, have children, and consume and die, at least I believe. So for that smaller element of my audience that believes in social issues and human rights and women's rights and children's rights and equality and is not afraid to hear the information, let alone frequently act on it, the rest of the show is meant for you. Now, some people like both. Some people like health and nutrition. Others like the other. But here's something for all of you who only want about health and nutrition. You don't want to hear anything else. If I didn't my entire career deal in social issues and the corruption within our systems, you wouldn't know about health today because it would all be denigrated. You wouldn't have organic produce. You wouldn't have holistic doctors. You wouldn't have holistic chiropractic. In fact, if I hadn't engaged, you wouldn't have chiropractic at all as a profession. It would be completely dead because it was on the ropes and being attacked, all for criminal reasons. And we intercede. I wrote articles. And maybe it might benefit you to go up on my website and download any of the 7 video bios. Gary Knoll as a social activist. Gary Knoll as an investigative reporter. Gary Knoll producing over 37 different specials on PBS stations. My history in broadcasting, my author of over 100 books. Many of those books are self-empowering books, like Helping People, Baby Boomer's Guide to Getting It Right the Second Time Around, because I sure as hell didn't get it right the first time around, and Dealing with the Human Condition. More than half of all the documentaries I've done have been on the human condition, like Overcoming the Dark Side, Love, Sexual Healing, Happiness. So you're looking at a very multi-diverse program. You can choose what you like and leave the rest be. So from now on, we will take a break after health and nutrition. If you're video watching this, and if that's all you want, that's fine. And you can come back the next day and get more on health and nutrition, because every day I'm going to give you about almost a half hour on it. So I just want to give that as an explanation. So when we go to this transition today, because now we have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people watching on, coming to us on, the numbers are staggering. Give you an idea, since I started a week ago, video streaming on Facebook, we have more people visiting and getting the message than all of our sister station BAS audience 24/7 combined. So it's huge. But we want to let you know why the program is set up the way it is, because all these pieces are part of the portrait of life. So let's begin. First off, I'm going to talk about Lyme's disease, because Lyme's disease is now becoming almost epidemic. In fact, almost everyone in the Northeast and the Midwest in the North, not the Northwest, but the center of America, like Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois, if you are outside, you have a high probability, if you're spending any time gardening or outside, you could get bitten by a tick. And not all ticks are going to be Lyme disease, but those who do, it's really growing. And even people who take their dogs to the country on the weekend, bring them back, frequently the dog has a tick, comes back in the apartment, drops, bites the people. So what do you do? Well, first, let's reinterpret what Lyme's disease is and isn't. Natural Health provides some good guidance on this. The myths and facts revealed. I'll quote this. Then I'll tell you what I would suggest that could help you or anyone you know who has Lyme's disease. And by the way, it's frequently confusing because not everybody gets that well. Not everybody gets the physical signature of the bite. And some people are suffering from what they thought was chronic fatigue syndrome, but it's actually Lyme's disease. Now, can we help a person with Lyme's? Yes. I've had people with full-blown Lyme's in bed for 16, 18 hours a day who today are living completely normal, healthy lives. I'll get to that in a moment. But first, according to the CDC, Lyme's disease strikes about 329,000 Americans every year and is characterized by a fever, headaches, fatigue, skin rash, and untreated Lyme's disease can spread to the brain and the nervous system and joints and your heart, and it can even kill you. And now researchers are finding out that the pathogen responsible for the disease is endlessly changing and is elusive and capable of defeating the immune system with tricks worthy of a master spy. Lyme's disease bacterium uses sneaky tactics. What do I mean? Lyme's disease caused by the Borrelia bacterium, or spirochete, is spread by the bite of an infected deer tick. As soon as the tick punctures the skin, the deception begins with immune modulators in the tick's saliva covering the spirochete like a cloaking device and concealing it from the host immune system. So in lay language, you've got the spirochete in your blood, but it's hidden. And as a result, the immune system that is working 24/7 can't see it, and hence it can take hold. So this strategy allows Lyme's bacteria to evade both the natural immune response and even man-made antibiotics. And because of this subterfuge, it can take weeks for the immune system to recognize the pathogen and produce antibodies. And the reason that common blood tests such as the ELISA and the Western blot fail to show the disease is because it's too soon. So let's say you got a tick bite. You don't want to go in the next day and get a test because it's too soon. You got to wait about a month. And then if you have the symptoms, then you can determine, because by that time the immune system's catching up. Now, the immune system normally recognizes pathogens by their cell wall proteins and then produces antibodies to combat the threat. But with the Borrelia, when it enters the body, it alters its outer shell wall proteins so it can't be identified correctly by the immune system. So when the immune system finally does launch an attack, it often is futile against the spirochete, which continues to change. And meanwhile, the toxin-releasing immune cells, such as the neutrophils and monocytes and macrophages, that are generated in an attempt to, in effect, what they do is visualize a Pac-Man. Here you got the spirochete. Here comes the, let's say, the basophils and the phagocytes. They envelop it, and they enzymatically digest it. In effect, they kill it. So that's how it works. But that frequently will not destroy the invader, but it does cause a lot of inflammation. And what you frequently find is inflammation in the brain, inflammation in the joints. People with Lyme disease frequently have so much pain in their body, they can't move. Pain in their legs, pain in their central nervous system. So Lyme's disease microbe benefits from unusual strategies even when it plays dead. So a lot of people think, oh, I'm over the Lyme disease. Why? Well, I took antibiotics. Not true. The Borrelia bacterium has several other unique features that help it to evade the body's natural defense system, including whip-like mechanisms that propels it through body tissue that would ordinarily stop bacteria from progressing. And then the bacterium also lacks the classic Achilles heel that caused many pathogens to be destroyed by the immune system, the metabolism of iron, and unlike every other organism in the world, This bacterium can exist without iron, which is normally essential for making proteins and enzymes. And because it uses the mineral manganese to produce essential substances, the user technique of the immune system designed to deprive pathogens of iron doesn't work. So that's just some of the latest. Now, what would I suggest? First and foremost, one of the things you've got to do is you've got to realize the immune system may not detect it in its current state, but you've got to super potentize your immune system. How do you do that? I have found that intravenous, meaning you get an infusion of in your vein, and give yourself a slow drip. You can't do this yourself. It's under medical treatment. And starting at 35,000 milligrams, and then gradually each week working up to another 10,000 milligrams till you're up to 100 to 150,000, even 200,000 milligrams with glutathione, because your liver needs help at this time, and glutathione is your most essential nutrient for your liver. Then also aqueous vitamin A. Now, you can't take a lot of regular vitamin A because it's toxic at a certain level. But an aqueous, meaning water-based, you could take 100,000 units of aqueous vitamin A. But you also want alpha-lipoic acid because alpha-lipoic acid, the R fraction, works inside the cell and outside the cell. So if you want an antioxidant that works in and out, it's alpha-lipoic acid. You also want to build up the mitochondria because what do people with Lyme's disease and chronic fatigue syndrome lack? Energy. Their mitochondria is not working properly. So PQQ, 20 milligrams, 2 or 3 times a day, and NAD, 100 milligrams, 2 or 3 or 4 times a day, can help not only repair damage to your cells done by bacterium, viruses, and spirochetes, but also build new ones. So in effect, you're building new mitochondria, new energy factories. And that little mitochondria, that tiny little cell, you can have hundreds or thousands of mitochondria in a single cell. The most of the mitochondria in your heart and your brain, because it requires an enormous amount of energy. In fact, your brain fitting in the palm of your hand, that brain is using upwards of 20% of your total calories in a day, your energy, through your metabolism. So that's why when people start losing mitochondria in the brain, they frequently have brain fog, memory loss, brain fatigue. And also always when you have these bacteria, viruses, or spirochetes, you can have inflammation from them or from the immune system, from cytokines, in the brain. And when you have inflammation in the brain or the central nervous system, you're far more susceptible to dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, memory loss. So you want to turn off the cytokines, bring them down, and you want to bring down all inflammation. Now, there's where quercetin, Q-U-E-R-E-C-T-I-N, quercetin. You get quercetin in the skin of apples, and that's why anyone who has, let's say, Lyme's disease or chronic fatigue syndrome that I see, I will have them take 5 apples, peel the skins, because the nutrients in the skin and just under it, throw it in a blender. Then I have them put in there some ginger and blend that up with green apple juice and drink that down. Also supplement with about 2,000 to 4,000 milligrams minimum a day of quercetin. Also double that of vitamin C. Then resveratrol protects the cell and it's terrific. And pomegranate. So if you had pomegranate, grapes, or grape juice, getting your resveratrol, about 100 milligrams, quercetin, 2 to 4,000 milligrams, vitamin C, 4 to 8,000 milligrams, intravenous vitamin C with aqueous vitamin A, and glutathione pushes, plus, especially important, it's important for all mental conditions, including autism spectrum disorder, 1 milligram of methylated vitamin B12 and 1 milligram of methylated folic acid, or folate. And that will make an enormous difference in brain energy, clarity, and also help recover your immune system. So that's to get you started. Now, separately, there is an herb. Write it down, because you probably have not heard of it. It is called euphorbia, E-U-P-H-O-R-B-I-A. And it does a lot of good things. And I always like to introduce something that isn't popular yet, but is available, but can do a lot, and it's non-toxic. It has a lot of medicinal properties, and it's been used in Malaysia and Polynesian medicine, Thai medicine, South African medicine for a long time. And the plant also goes by names such as red spurge, S-P-U-R-G-E, snakeweed, pill-bearing spurge, Mexican shrubby spurge, Caribbean copper plant, asthma herb. Those are other names for it. It's a short, skinny tree with red leaves and branches, and it's indigenous to many of the tropical regions. And it also grows in the southern United States. And it really is good if you have candida. It is good if you have yeast overgrowth. It's good if your immune system is weakened. It's good if you're feeling a cold or flu coming on. And if you just want an overall tonic, it's really good against E. coli bacteria. In fact, it has antiviral and antibacterial properties. And it also is good against cancer. So something new. And also, finally, from Osaka University in Japan, they found that the immune system, and this is brand new, and so you're getting this ahead of everyone, promotes spontaneous heart regeneration. How about that? We were told all these decades that whatever cells your heart has, that's it. You damage it, it's damaged. The brain the same way. Now we know with the plasticity of the brain, we can shape the brain. We can create new neurons. We can create new dendrites. We can create an effect. That's how we've been able to help people with these diseases. And here's what it says. I'll quote this. It says, in adult mammal hearts, cardiomyocytes do not proliferate following damage, like that caused by a myocardial infarction or a heart attack. However, the inability to proliferate is not true for all animals, and even in mammals, these cardiomyocytes, proliferation is known. And then it goes on to talk about when you rebuild your immune system and your immune system is strong, that you're also helping to increase these particular regenerative properties. And it worked. So, and let me just end our health nutrition with something simple. We have what is called applied science, and we have basic science. I spent 33 years at the Institute of Applied Biology as a research fellow. I was director and worked almost every night in the lab in anti-aging medicine. And my whole background is, as a scientist, was can what we eat, what we think, the environment we live in, what we believe, what we drink, what we consume, can it actually alter the DNA? Now, when I started, no one believed this. No one at the Institute believed, and it was a very orthodox place where people generally did chemotherapy work and psychiatric drug work. I was the oddball upstairs that believed that what you ate actually made a difference. And I'm talking to guys who were chain smoking at big bellies, right? Nothing better than having a big, really big bellied, chain smoking, alcohol drinking, scientists lecture me on health, and while they're coughing and wheezing and waiting for the medic to get there to restart their heart. It's always good to see this kind of hubris, and you talk about narcissism in Washington. Oh, do we have narcissism in academia and in science? It's proliferate. In any case, I was able to take a group of rats, and by changing their diet and giving them the foods that I now recommend to people that you should eat, I saw them rejuvenate. I saw them keep their body mass and muscle mass and energy. Doing blood chemistry measurements, we could see that a rat that in human years would have been 90 actually was functioning at a 20-year-old. If you gave them, for example, instead of rat pellet chow, little pellets to eat as chow, you gave them fresh organic beans and sprouts and nuts and seeds and fresh juices, and turned off the lights and gave them full spectrum lights and let them out of their cages, let them just run wild, it would have freaked you out. Because I put in a glass wall so people could come up from my radio audience and at nighttime. And one night there were over 47 people sitting there watching as I was doing these experiments. and also the quality of the music I would play. If I played soft classical music, meditative music, boy, it just created a mellow sensation. And they lived almost twice their normal lifespan. So if it worked on a rat, why wouldn't it work on a human? The trouble is no one that I knew was willing to do it. All my family members, oh, they were adamant. Gary, you going to have us eat rabbit food again? Are we going to be eating lettuce, Gary? Is that what we're going to have Thanksgiving meal with? Lettuce, stuffed lettuce? Yeah. My whole life I got the brunt of this kind of, we're not going to do it, but we're glad you're doing something you like. Of course, while they were dying of heart attacks and cancers and stroke, and they all had diabetes, they all were overweight, they were all out of shape. And forget running. If they walked too fast, you know, to the bathroom, they'd collapse. And they all smoked 3 packs or 4 packs a day and thought that was completely normal and drank, and that was normal. And ate anything that looked like it had come from an animal, that was normal. But a vegetable, not so much. And fruit, maybe once a year. If it's in a can, if it's sweet, yes. That's the environment I grew up in. Nice people, I loved them in spite of this. We share differences, as my friends and I do. And I'm not there to preach. I'm not there to advocate for you to make changes. I'm merely there to show you what is possible. If you come to a point in your life where you feel you should make changes, that there's some good options for you. So in any case, I took that information from all those years and years of studies, and I took it across the street to Trafalgar Hospital, and because I'm also a registered dietitian and also a clinical nutritionist and also a PhD in human nutrition and public health science, I was able to use that to justify, because first thing you say is, well, who are you, and what are you coming in here and telling us how we should feed our patients? And I'm saying, well, I'm on the board, and I work across the street, and I have the qualifications, but I'd like to see if the diet you're feeding these people who have cancer is actually contributing to a hastening of their death, because of poor nutrition, malnutrition, overfed, undernourished, and whether or not a diet that I have clinically proven extends life, prevents cancer, obesity, and diabetes in animals, if that couldn't help a human being. And it was fought every single second of the way. I mean, every argument and malicious gossip, you know, oh, what's he know? And, you know, and this is not in the scientific literature. Of course it was not in the scientific literature. Hello. A lot of things are not in the scientific literature. If you're living by consensus and the conformity of being rewarded for being closed-minded and sticking to what will keep your grants coming and your pay coming, ask the average oncologist, what percentage of your patients die because of the chemotherapy you're giving? And how much money did you make from that since you were able to buy it from wholesale, sell it to the patient at retail, and keep that difference for yourself, generally anywhere in the neighborhood of $5,000 to $7,000 per treatment? So when someone says, all my treatment cost me $250,000, well, it shouldn't. If we had universal health care, which we should, it wouldn't. If we really cared about the results and the outcome instead of the effort and the mimicking that we're doing the best, we wrap everything in these presentations that the patient is gallant and the doctor is the hero because they're fighting the good fight. No. You fight the good fight when you pull back and you start from scratch and say, look, we've had 45 years of war on cancer, and we have failed. We've caused 10 million people to die because our treatment didn't work. Shouldn't we have the humility, austerity of spirit to try something else? Maybe there's some voices. Dr. Stanislaw Brzezinski, the late, but his therapy still continues, Nicholas Gonzalez, Michael Schachter, who's still alive and suffering in New York, Dr. Rivisi's therapy, Dr. Livingston Wheeler's therapy, the doctors who have proven beyond any question that their therapies work, but they're all non-toxic, they're all natural, they rebalance the body's chemistry in different, unique ways, each person differently. Why aren't we looking at their work? Well, they're quacks. What makes a person a quack? Well, they're not medical doctors. Well, they're medical doctors. Well, there's secret formula. There's no secret formula. They published it. Well, they don't share it. Well, they presented it at scientific conferences. They published in peer-reviewed literature. Well, they're profiting from it. None of those people I knew, none of them I just mentioned are rich. None of them. They didn't charge people these astronomical amounts. So we haven't even got to the place where we can acknowledge that our system, our paradigm has failed, and that we've been doing almost everything wrong. This Friday, I'm going to do a segment every Friday honoring unique women throughout history. And one of the women I won't mention now, but you'll hear it on Friday's show in the afternoon, the second part of our program, is a woman who fought the establishment. She didn't win, but her patients did. She cured a high number of them. Why is it that we have empowered women to make wrong choices? If women use the power we have, at least in our country and some other countries, of course, we wouldn't have wars around the world. We wouldn't be intervening in other people's politics. We wouldn't be regime changing. We wouldn't have kids who are dying before their parents. We wouldn't have mandatory vaccine. We wouldn't have all the nonsense we have today because people would be making right choices. Then what causes the wrong choice in a person who feels and acts empowered? That's our discussion on coming up. But anyhow, what I saw in my career up to this point is that even when you have the truth, when you have a better way, when you can prove that by any standard, it doesn't mean that everyone's going to say, hey, that sounds good. You got a better way of detoxifying the liver? You got a way of helping the heart? If you got arrhythmias, you're taking an aspirin, all right, AFib. What if I told you that magnesium at a certain potency level will help correct that heart irregular rhythm along with L-carnitine and about seven other nutrients? Why don't our cardiologists have that information? Why aren't we sharing that? Because that's not where the money is. Follow the money trail, and it always ends up in honoring an institution rather than the patient. So it's time for change. So that's what we get here. We give you stuff that helps you make better choices if you choose to. So here's what I suggest. I suggest that you look at the articles, there are about 10,737 I've written, on healthy choices. Heart, cancer, arthritis, inflammation, obesity, they're all there. Then look at those on organic versus GMOs. Look at the bios that show you all this. Look at the documentaries, over 100. It's all there. The tools are there. Some people will be interested enough to look. Other people, they just want to know one part, and that's it, and that's fine. Because my hope is the day comes when they start putting that part together with other parts. Because life is Gaia. We are many parts. We have universal truths, then we have our own individual truths. And we honor all that. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a break and come back in a moment. So for those of you who are listening and watching this over Facebook, keep in mind that first part of our program, today it's a half hour, 32 minutes in the show, it's about health and nutrition, but now we take a break. The show will end for you, but then you can tune back in. It'll show you on your computer where you can click and join us because I have a guest coming up and we have social issues to get to and commentaries to get to. And we do more commentaries on this program than any other radio program in America. And these are not simplistic, superficial commentaries. These I write to challenge us to go deeper into an issue. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. In the jungle.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studio in New York City. You can go to my Facebook and get on and watch it if you want. And it'll be streaming live on Progress Radio Network within a couple days or a week at the most. We're going to go now to our guest who is standing by on the phone, and she's out in Minnesota. She is Colleen Rowley, and I mentioned her earlier in the program. She's a retired FBI special agent who was with the agency for 24 years and a former Minnesota Division legal counsel. She's testified before Congress. She's a whistleblower. And we're here to talk about a look an honest look. Not a superficial look, not a biased look, an honest look at Robert Mueller and James Comey and the failures that they engaged with in illegal activities. Because right now the entire media is sanitizing them for their own political and ideological reasons, and we like to see the truth of things, and that's why we're the only people to go after the white helmets and show you the truth about that terrorist organization. But others have them on their program, praise them, give them an Academy Award. They have an enormous public relations machine behind them, but we show you the truth. Let's say hello to Colleen. Hi, Colleen. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for having me, and thanks for supporting the truth. You know, what Mark Twain used to say is, if you never lie, you never have to remember anything.
Good. All right. I would, right now, what we're seeing is we're seeing everyone in the media describe Comey and Mueller without talking about the quality of their reputation, except it's impeccable. You worked with Mueller. You knew him. So take us back and your experiences, and what can you inform us about he or Comey, and do you believe that he could be objective today in his investigation, or do you believe that his former relationship with Comey, Mueller and Comey's relationship, could in any way slant or be biased so that it would become more political than just an honest look at the investigation that they're engaged in?
Well, I was motivated to write a piece that just scratches the surface on some of this recent history. And by the way, these various incidents and investigation fiascos that both Mueller and Comey have been involved in for decades, not just after 9/11, but even before that, but especially after 9/11, where the Bush-Cheney got the so-called New Pearl Harbor opportunity to put the law in the background. So I wrote this piece on Consortium News and a couple other sites because it seems like we're in the United States of amnesia. All of these things were front page news stories. They are not ancient history, but recent history. And yet you're not hearing really anyone in the media mention these things. So let's just start with 9/11 itself. You can't blame Robert Mueller for the intelligence failures that my whistleblowing memo was about, because he was only director for 1 week before 9/11. However, you can blame him because he and others basically led a cover-up after 9/11 not to tell the truth about the failures of officials to read their memos and the intelligence that was pouring in spring and summer of 2001. All of the warnings that were disregarded. You get a lot of officials just saying, I didn't even read the memo, just not even reading it, let alone sharing of information or acting on it. And because Cheney was loathe to have any accountability and fought any investigation of 9/11 tooth and nail for several months, of course, the underlings went along with that. The problem with that, of course, people say, well, you know, I can understand why you don't want to admit such embarrassing, truth before 9/11, because all the people died. And I mean, how this would just this would be so embarrassing that it would crush people. I understand that. But if you don't tell the truth, it doesn't get fixed. And of course, even to this day, I don't know of any mechanisms that fix the failure to share information and read information. On the other hand, that length of time where they obfuscated this and before the media finally dribbled it out allowed the Bush-Cheney to gin up war on a country that had nothing to do with 9/11. It allowed John Yoo to go to work and basically write secret memos that created a form of martial law, allowed for torture, allowed warrantless monitoring. All of those things were deemed to be the fixes for the terrorism, when in fact they had nothing to do with the terrorism problem and actually increased it. So that's what comes of not telling the truth about something that's embarrassing, like an embarrassing failure. And certainly Mueller was part of that. Later, James Comey and Mueller both helped guide the anthrax investigation into a totally wrong person, a totally innocent guy who was dogged by the FBI for, I think, well over a year, maybe two. And eventually, he was able to sue and win nearly $6 million for the FBI having improperly targeted him. Again, that was led by Mueller and Comey. Right after 9/11, in an effort to do PR and show that the FBI was making progress on terrorism, even though, again, this is helping cover up the problems, too, the FBI went out and detained people in New York, mostly in New York City, immigrants mostly in New York City, and put out press releases as if these were terrorists. This went on for months with 100, 200, 300, 400, and then eventually 1,000 immigrants in custody. 2 years later, the inspector general found that none of those immigrants who had been rounded up in the post-9/11 roundup had anything to do with terrorism. Again, that was Robert Mueller in charge of that. You also had, of course, just hundreds of thousands of national security letters that were served improperly. The inspector general has found at least twice and criticized Mueller for that. James Comey, before he left as deputy attorney general, signed off on torture tactics as well as defended indefinite detention of people, of Americans, for years without charges or right to counsel. Okay, so these are all horrendous illegal actions that they've been involved in, and they're being upheld and again put on pillars as if they are you know, integrity and upholders of the law, you know, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. type FBI stalwarts. Essentially, Mueller and Comey are two peas in a pod. They've had almost identical career paths as assistant U.S. attorneys, U.S. attorneys, Department of Justice attorneys, and FBI directors. And they have bonded at least for 15 years to the point where they're called comrades in arms. They're very close collaborators and on more than one issue. And that alone, even if they had stellar backgrounds, I think should be disqualifying. When Comey admits that he leaked a memo that he wrote himself, was not classified, but it was probably privileged, and he leaks it to a friend, to the media, but he leaks it for the purpose of getting the special counsel, which just turns out to be his closest collaborator friend, Robert Mueller. I mean, that is really, I think, if nothing else, the conflict of interest that a star witness in the investigation, which is going to be Comey, because now the investigation has turned on obstruction of justice, and this star witness is also the victim and also happens to be a close confidant of the prosecutor. I'm sorry, I think it's a conflict of interest, if nothing else.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I just have one more question. We usually think of our intelligence agencies, both the FBI and the CIA, as monolithic institutions. And I've had more guests on the past talk about this, like from the CIA. We've had Ray McGovern, Paul Pillar, Robert David Steele, and others. They give the indication that the CIA is divided, that there are multiple CIAs operating under a single umbrella, similar to one finding faction of hawks and doves in the Pentagon. They're not all of one mindset. You were there 24 years. Is it correct to assume the FBI is likewise divided internally by different factions? And if so, what is the danger of having these different factions within the FBI?
You know, under J. Edgar Hoover, which was before my time, he tried to get a monolithic, and I think largely was successful in doing that, especially the notion of never embarrassing the Bureau. That was very much imprinted on nearly everyone. And so there was a real reluctance to really tell the truth in some of these, you know, failures that occurred, which are natural. They're human. No agency is going to be perfect. So, but when that happened, there was always, you know, this don't embarrass the Bureau from Hoover. I think I've been retired since 2004, but I sense now that there is more division than there maybe was before. because the FBI tended to be conservative, but I think now with Obama administration and the war on terror, I think that there has been a sea change, and I think that there are people that don't agree. I mean, especially when it gets polarized with the Hillary Clinton. We had two candidates and campaigns that were both under FBI investigation before the election. That's unprecedented. And I have a feeling that that did split the FBI to some extent. Again, two presidential candidates simultaneously for different reasons under investigation by the FBI. And probably people did have some different opinions on that just due to political partisanship.
Well, I would be critical of both of these individuals because they both supported torture. They both were aware of cover-ups at the FBI before 9/11. You were there. You're the one who was the whistleblower. You were the only whistleblower at the FBI who showed, hey, all these memos, all these communications, we knew that there was going to be an action. We knew some of these, where these terrorists were. We knew a lot, and we weren't sharing this information. We didn't make this a priority. And as a result, it allowed or facilitated 9/11 to happen. And if that came out, and it came out based upon, okay, the people in charge of the FBI at the time were responsible, but later if someone came in and took over the FBI and knew that that happened and didn't do anything about it, then they're also culpable. But I have right here what is, I think, most important. This whole brouhaha about how Russian hacked the election and therefore gave it to Trump. First of all, if they have the evidence that, fine, bring it forward. They haven't. They've all only dealt in innuendo. But here's what I have. And no one, I mean no one in the media is talking about this. Carnegie Mellon University, they did a study from 1946 to 2000. And the U.S. interfered in 81 national democratic elections in other countries. Let me repeat that. 81 democratic elections around the world, the United States, through the FBI, through this, mainly through the CIA and our National Intelligence Agency, we interfered. And 59% of those interferences were successful, meaning we got rid of the people we didn't like, we got regimes in place, we were engaged in regime change. And sometimes these were bloody, especially in Central and South America. If we didn't like unions, union people would be shot. If we didn't like pro-democracy advocates, then those people would be disappeared. We supported all the dictators, Somoza in Nicaragua and Pinochet in Chile, just to name a few. Now, the U.S. intervention in Russia goes back to Woodrow Wilson's administration because we did that as well. Italy in 1948, Syria in 1949, again in 1953, Iran in 1953, Guatemala in 54. So I have all the countries that we, the United States, engaged in not just hacking something, but physically changing the outcome of their elections, and frequently with murder and creating enormous disadvantages. Always in every single one of these 81, I checked it carefully, 81 countries we, the United States, intervened in, it was always for those in the most powerful 1%. We never once intervened to help the poor, the downtrodden, the middle class, those people who cared about life. They were the enemy. So how in the world can any responsible and reasonable person stand up and say, I'm outraged by Russia trying to hack into our election? Well, prove it. But I have nothing to say about we hacking into everyone else's election and actually changing it and actually creating coups and actually causing murder and causing millions of people to die. So right now, do you hear anyone apologizing for the mess that Libya's in or the mess that Syria's in? No. Your final thoughts on this?
Well, I 100% agree with you. You've really nailed it. And if we only had some perspective on this history, I do know one really great writer, Mark Ames, who has written a couple of pieces about how during the Clinton administration, they orchestrated the election of Yeltsin because Yeltsin was allowing the looting of Russia for some commercial interests, you know, corporate interests in the United States. And so, in fact, that was the cover of a of a Time magazine. It had a picture of Yeltsin and had a whole story about how the U.S. had orchestrated his reelection, even though he shouldn't have been reelected. So one case, you're right, in 81 others. And because of this, the Americans are demonizing the Russians. I think the people of both countries, both the Americans as well as Russians, were the victims of this. We do have these power-mongering battles going on in Washington, D.C. between different camps. But who's the victim here? It's us. It's the public. Even this special counsel now is probably going to go on for years and cost millions of dollars from the taxpayer. When there are cover-ups in law enforcement, who pays? The taxpayers pay.
One final thought. If you were an environmental activist, if you cared about organic versus GMO, you wanted to see GMO labeled. So if you went into a supermarket, you have an apple that is organic and one that has a label that says, I'm genetically engineered. You have a right to choose. The FBI infiltrated every single environmental group in the United States. They have agent provocateurs. They have never been held accountable for Operation COINTELPRO, MK Ultra, the things that they were part of. No one was ever held accountable for trying to get Martin Luther King, blackmailing him because he was having an affair with one of his the women in his entourage, and tried to get him to commit suicide. No one has ever been held accountable for that. Also, the FBI, working with Homeland Security, had every single identity possible with iris scans, with photographs, with recordings, secret recordings of every one of the Occupy Movement members. Every Occupy Movement around the country was infiltrated. In one of the Freedom of Information Act documents, I saw it was up to 10% in some cases of people who were attending a group. These are peaceful people who are engaged in legal and peaceful nonviolent demonstration. So now if anyone today demonstrates against anything that is corporatized or government, you are now put on an FBI watch list. And yet that is considered acceptable by the people who have allowed Comey and Mueller to ride roughshod over our rights. Also, both are responsible for not acknowledging that a person arrested should engage in the habeas corpus. That's, you know what you're being charged with, you know the evidence against you, and have an opportunity to present your defense. Both of those people said no. To me, that is fascism in the extreme. Colleen, thank you for being on. I appreciate it. Continue your good work.
Thank you.
Colleen Rowley, R-O-W-L-E-Y, and her, you can get, let's see that she has, Colleen, do you have a book there? I don't see a book. Well, she writes for Consortium News. It's ColleenRowley.com. In studio, to finish off our program, Dave, we're going to wait till tomorrow to play our Poverty Inc. Part 2. We have Elizabeth. Elizabeth, you looked at some of the emails.
We had some good questions coming in, but this one comes from Facebook directly, from John Barton. He says, I have a question for Gary. If you were to get asked by a progressive-thinking president, Bernie Sanders or Jill Stein, to head a federal agency, which one would you pick?
First, I would never get invited by Bernie Sanders to anything. He is a liberal on domestic policies. He is not liberal on foreign policies, all right? He is pro-Israel, pro-Saudi Arabia, pro-intervention. But on domestic policies, I support him. He does a lot of good. If it were Jill Stein, there's a possibility I might be invited to do something. And if they said, where could you make a difference, that would be the National Institutes of Health, because that is the most corrupt, one of the most corrupt agencies of government. We get very little. The CDC is totally corrupt. FDA is totally corrupt. National Institute, Cancer Institute, totally corrupt. National Institutes of Infectious Disease and Allergy, totally corrupt. Those all should be completely replaced and get independent, real independent scientists, physicians, public health advocates to deal with it and keep completely away from the pharmaceutical industry, where the pharmaceutical industry has to provide absolute proof of efficacy and safety, and then you have an independent laboratory verify it. Right now, there's no independent verification. We only find out years later when 50% of all the drugs approved in one 10-year period had to be rejected or restated because they were dangerous. So we don't want to know why Vioxx is bad years later. We want to know before it gets on the market, what's wrong with Vioxx? So you've got to take all the profit out of medicine for it to be viable. You shouldn't have a drug that has 100,000% markup over its 30-day generic cost. You shouldn't have a drug that a jar of 30 tablets costs 10 cents and you're selling it for $400. That should not exist.
Right. Lots of people want you to become president. You know that, don't you? There's a lot of those questions. Gary Null for president.
Yeah, no, I want to live a little longer. Thank you. Good. We don't have more time today. We'll get your questions. And if you would like to address any question, please email it and give the address where they email.
Yes, it's prnstudio@gmail.com. Or one word.
And don't forget, this Sunday night, my webinar on healing the brain naturally, starting at 7 p.m. Go to GaryNull.com. You'll see where you can sign up because we're going to be packed. I'm going to deal with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, memory loss, aging of the brain, how to reverse it, slow it down. So, and we're going to show in a documentary you haven't seen as well at the same time. So that's good. That's the webinar coming up. And also tonight, a very powerful hour. You're going to hear two of the best minds in the world talk about the real economy and why it's not coming back and how in the last week, 1,000 retail stores have closed and over 100,000 people in the last 10 months have lost their jobs who worked in those. Why aren't we being told this? What's the truth about what's happening tonight, 7 p.m., Progressive Commentary Hour? Thank you all for listening and watching. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
Snap your finger, I'll come running.